But next are the glad tidings which Zechariah proclaims. Their sufferings are not to continue forever. They are prisoners of hope, which later will soon be realized. For your shame ye shall have double, and for confusion they shall rejoice in their portion. Therefore in their land they shall possess the double. Everlasting joy shall be unto them. Isaiah 61, verse 7. But before this glorious consummation, there must be the breaking down of Gentile world power, for all the enemies of God's kingdom must be overthrown, and this is what these final verses of Zechariah 9 graphically portray. When I have bent Judah for me, filled the bow with Ephraim, and raised up thy sons, O Zion, against thy sons, O Greece, and made thee as the sword of a mighty man, Zechariah 9, verse 13. This verse concludes the preceding verse. The Lord will use his people, the Jews, as men of war to conquer and thoroughly subjugate his enemies. Judah shall be the bent bow, Ephraim the arrows, and Zion the drawn sword in the hand of Christ, King of God's kingdom. O Greece, referred to in this passage, to whom the sons of Zion were in opposition, is the Grecian world power, which in Zechariah's day was about to come. But, as we have seen, we must look to the greater fulfillment of these prophecies in the latter time. In the former days, there were wars between the Grecian Empire and the Jews. Those were religious in character. An attempt was made to overturn the Jewish religion and substitute in its place Grecian customs. The Maccabean heroes took hold of the situation, resisting the enemy in the name of the Lord, with the full conviction that the cause in which they were engaged was his cause, and that he was with them and would defend them as well as empower them in the conflict. Their faith was not in vain. He was the strength of his people, and the following citation shows that he shall prove himself in this wise again. And the Lord shall be seen over them, and his arrow shall go forth as the lightning, and the Lord God shall blow the trumpet and shall go with whirlwinds of the south. The Lord of hosts shall defend them, and they shall devour and subdue with sling stones, and they shall drink and make a noise as through wine, and they shall be filled like bowls and as the corners of the altar. Zechariah 9, verses 14 and 15. The language is glowing and figurative. It is so vivid in its beauty and strength that many commentators think it highly exaggerated in reference to the Maccabean exploits. But the Lord delights in the faith of his people and in their victories, which, though they appear small in the eyes of men, are great in his eyes. It is true that the Maccabees had only a small, unorganized army of the poor and despised of the people. Judas and his brethren commanded those insignificant regiments. Nevertheless, they were the army of the Lord as well as the army of Israel. They went forth to battle, even as it is written of David, the stripling in his day. The Grecian Empire was, even as Goliath, the Philistine, the enemy of the Lord, and God fought for the Maccabees as he did for David. Out of weakness they were made strong. They waxed valiant in fight and turned to flight the armies of the alien. Hebrews 11:34. But as we have noted again and again, these prophecies of Zechariah cannot be restricted to any former time. Therefore we say with assurance that this whole passage points on to the complete subjugation of Gentile dominion. Zion stands for the kingdom of God, while Greece stands for the kingdoms of the world which will be ruling in the time of Christ's second advent. The city of God and the city of the world will be in opposition the one to the other. The two world kingdoms cannot rule at the same time. One must go down in defeat while the other rises. The overthrow of Antiochus Epiphanes and his successors at the hands of a comparative handful of despised Jews under the Maccabees, to which this has a slight reference, foreshadows the final conflict of the world powers and the judgments to be inflicted on the confederated armies that shall assuredly be gathered against Jerusalem for that great battle of Armageddon, which is still yet to come. Those armies will be against God as well as against his people. Hence, the Lord will fight against them. He will empower the Jew They shall be strong in the Lord and fight in the strength of Jehovah, so that the feeble among them shall in that day be as David, and the house of David shall be as God, as the angel of the Lord before them. Zechariah 12, verse 8. That will be the time when Jehovah shall be seen over them, and his arrow shall be manifested as the lightning. He, as captain of the host of the Lord, shall blow the trumpet and go forth to fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. He will defend them, and they shall devour. They shall drink and make a noise, even as a man filled with wine. Zechariah 9:15. The eating and drinking is figurative of a great conflict in which the prophet is reminded by the Spirit of that prophecy of Balaam uttered centuries before. Behold, the people, Israel, shall rise up as a great lion and lift up himself as a young lion. He shall not lie down till he eat of the prey and drink the blood of the slain. Numbers 23:24. The thought is that as the lion actually devours his enemies, so shall Christ the Lord subdue and overcome those that withstand him in that dreadful day of judgment. They shall disappear as completely as the food of the lion. They shall subdue with sling stones, implies the weakness of the means used to get the victory. It will be as it was with David and Goliath. They shall drink and make a noise as through wine, and they shall be filled like bowls, and as the corners of the altar, refers to the ecstatic celebration of the victorious people. They will be wild with delight as though drunk with wine. They will be filled like the bowls in which the priests were wont to catch the blood of the victims which were slain, and sprinkled with it, even as the corners or horns of the altar were sprinkled with the sacrificial blood. The real significance is that the judgment of God, which will be poured out upon the wicked people, satisfies them in some sense. Their sufferings have been atoned for by the poured out wrath of God upon their enemies. Then the beautiful ending that is reached in the last two verses of Zechariah chapter 9. And the Lord their God shall save them in that day as the flock of his people, for they shall be as the stones of a crown, lifted up as an ensign upon his land. For how great is his goodness, and how great is his beauty! Corn shall make the young men cheerful, and new wine the maids. Zechariah 9, verses 16 and 17. The overthrow of Gentile world power, which will be an usurpation of Christ's kingdom for almost 7 years, will be followed by the exaltation of the Jews. They will come into their own place as the leading people of the earth. The words, "and the Lord their God shall save them," does not signify salvation in the negative sense merely, but in the positive sense also, as the next clause interprets. He will be to them and do for them all that the natural shepherd is and does for his flock. He will not only seek and deliver and gather his flock, but will feed, tend, lead, and rule his people. He will be to them all that is implied in the Hebrew word shepherd. It has the thought of a king as well as a shepherd. The 23rd Psalm, which has been so precious to all the people of God throughout all the centuries since it was penned, will be a real experience to them. They shall not want any good thing. Their shepherd shall lead them by the still waters and into green pastures. Their cup of joy will run over. They indeed and in truth will enter into the rest provided for them. The second part of verse 16 gives us another aspect of this salvation, which shall be the portion of Abraham's seed. They shall be for stones of a crown, lifted up as an ensign upon his land, refers to the glorification of the Jews. They shall be honored with their righteous ruler, set as jewels in the glittering diadem of their king. After the nation has received their Messiah, after Zion's righteousness has gone forth as brightness, and her salvation as a lamp that burneth, so that nations shall see their righteousness and all kings their glory, then they shall be a crown of beauty in the hand of Jehovah, and a royal diadem in the hand of God. Isaiah 62, verses 2 and 3. It is in his land that this shall be seen. The Lord stands in a special relationship to Palestine as well as to the people of Israel. He declares that the land belongs to him, The land is mine, he says, and though he appointed it with a gracious purpose in view as the inheritance of the seed of Abraham, yet the ownership remains vested in him. It is Emmanuel's land because the Messiah is the true heir to it. He is the seed of Abraham to whom it was promised, as well as the son of David and the son of God. He shall enjoy the land with his people when they are restored and in covenant relationship with him. The section ends with an outburst of praise to the Lord. The prophet exclaims, "How great is his goodness and how great is his beauty!" Goodness is frequently attributed to God in the Old Testament. In Psalm 31:19 we read, "Oh, how great is thy goodness which thou hast laid up for them that fear thee, which thou hast wrought for them that put their trust in thee before the sons of men." Goodness is that phase of God's character whereby he is moved to communicate to his creatures good of every kind and without limit or measure, because he is the creator as well as the full expression of all good. Beauty is not attributed to God, but it is used of the Messiah King in such scriptures as, "Thou art fairer," more beautiful, "than the sons of men," Psalm 45 verse 2. Another, "Thine eyes shall see the king in his beauty," Isaiah 33:17. It is to Israel that these words are addressed. It is in the face of their kinsman redeemer that they will behold the glory and beauty of the invisible God. That wondrous goodness and beauty of Jehovah shall be reflected in that great nation, Israel, when they are converted to the right way and restored to their right place in the earth. Material prosperity, abundance of all earthly goods, shall be their portion under the shadow of the Almighty. Corn, exclaims the prophet, shall make the young men cheerful, and new wine the maids. Palestine shall once again, and more so than ever before, be a land flowing with milk and honey, Exodus 3:8. Its many centuries of barrenness and desolation will be forgotten in the fertilizing showers of the latter rain, which will be due to fall. It will be the time of rejuvenation of the land as well as of the people, which the next chapter predicts and assures.